And now, referring to another article in the Monterey Herald last week by Alex Highbell. He was brought up, lived in Argentina, and teaches here at the Monterey Institute in the summer program. He has an article, The Falklands Invasion, Why Now? And he says the Argentine government opt for this invasion at this time because the Reagan administration gave the go-ahead. He implies that they really suggested that they could get away with it. He says Argentina's bargaining power in the United States increased very much when Ronald Reagan came to power, and it's of paramount importance that Reagan would give them anything. If he thought they were stopping the spread of communism, Reagan and Haig would give them anything. The funny thing was that as soon as Argentine began to take their power on the island and tell the British to go shove it, the Soviet Union lined up with Argentine. Here we have pursued this and encouraged them and have not figured out the role that the other nations will play in this big script. As we flounder around, as we did in Southeast Asia, in the Middle East, in Libya, we've blown it in so many countries, our foreign policy, and we didn't even judge, you know, what Argentine would do in their alignment with the Soviet Union. Well, we encouraged them to go ahead and make this move. It's an interesting article in the New York Times. Haig aides see White House sniping in dispute over a plane. Another article in the New York Times, April the 14th, Haig needs a win badly. And it goes into his embarrassment of having various people from El Salvador testify, this fellow that came over, and then it turned out that he was forced to give his testimony under torture, and he changed his opinion. And the diagrams of installations were built in Central America, and it turned out Somoza had built them. And this article is about Haig being pushed against the wall and almost embarrassed. Another Los Angeles Times article about our State Department last Thursday with Thomas O. Enders, the Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, working on the Argentine problem. And I mentioned last week or the week before, Mr. Enders' wife with the most wealthy woman from Argentina, entertained in Washington, D.C., the same day that the Argentines went into the Falklands. Haig working with Enders and the State Department, double-dealing. One end, they're socializing, like Gene Kirkpatrick, and the other, they're pretending to be neutral. There's another article in the Washington Post, as Haig shuttles, irksome sideshows occur. And it shows Haig, and it's an article whittling away some of his credibility. And the article in Atlantic Monthly by Seymour Hersh, a section of a book, chewing out Haig with his wiretapping during the Watergate era and sneaking on people with Henry Kissinger. And another article in the Wall Street Journal about Mr. Haig trying to enhance his influence by excluding Reagan's chief domestic advisors, Mr. Baker, Meese, and Deaver, and trying to get control, and he can't dislodge them. And there have been a lot of articles on another one, Jack Anderson, Haig's humiliation. Well, it's very dangerous to poke at this man. He's dangerous if you leave him alone, and he's dangerous if you poke him because you don't know how far he's going to go or what he's doing under the table. The account that Seymour Hersh is writing about Kissinger and Haig is just a tiny bit of what went on in Nixon's White House or through the whole career of this man. I've mentioned it many times on the air. And there's a new book out by Ludlum called The Parsifal Mosaic, and there's some good reviews of this book because, in essence, he refers to a man who has an iron mentor, and that's the name used for Fritz Kramer, the fellow that is the genius or devil behind Fritz Kramer, behind Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger. And in this Parsifal Mosaic, he has this Secretary of State who shouldn't have so much power. And Ludlum, the whole idea is that if you give him too much power, he could go crazy. And Robert Ludlum has this, it's a bestseller book, The Parsifal Mosaic, about the Secretary of State who has gone mad from the pressures of office and entered into insane schemes. And he's been used to start World War III. And in interviews, Ludlum said that he doesn't believe any man should have so much power. And he obviously is writing about a combination of Haig and Kissinger, and he, the Secretary of State, who's gone mad from the pressures of office. And it seems with the shuttling and the knife stabbing in the back, the journalists in all the papers, the Washington Post and the New York Times and various papers, are stabbing at him and poking him, now that he doesn't deserve it. But this is a very dangerous man, and if he's pushed too far, we don't know where he'll go, and we always sit on the brink of World War III when these kinds of people take office. So, while there's a good novel by Robert Ludlum on the dangers of this kind of a person, it's a tragic situation that after Watergate, with all the information we had, that we even allowed these people like Kissinger or Haig to continue the power they have and go back and forth because they're double dealers with their own staff and with other heads of states. This one review in the L.A. Times of the Parsifal Mosaic refers to the Iron Mentor, and that's the word that the Washington Post referred to Fritz Kramer behind Haig and Kissinger. And there's quite a few reviews of this book, different people's opinions of Parsifal Mosaic. I don't read very many or hardly any books of fiction because nonfiction is so interesting, but Robert Ludlum has written some very important books in terms of his seeming to know what's going on the inside and not liking it at all. And in interviews in private while he's promoting his book, he really fears the power of these people. And as I say, we don't know where they'll go, so that it's open-ended down there. One thing I know is that there's going to be a lot of heartaches in terms of resolving the confrontation, people taking sides and lining up against each other. But what we really don't know is how much more down there is concealed in terms of wealth, energy, arms, or buildings that have been kept secret from us up to this time. There's another article in the newspaper this last week, the Falklands could create a financial crisis. And that's along the lines that I have been trying to illustrate through the program for years, what I call the missing millions, the missing billions of loans, the floating money from Swiss banks, from South American banks, the transferring of billions of dollars out of this country down to South America for the provisions for what is taking place now, so that our banks are emptied out, but they have gold and cash, and they've been salting away money for the past 37 years and taking out loans, many countries, and they may have just used that money, not produced anything, but used it for a future war that they have had the intent of taking on since World War II. This article says, once again, the world's bankers are having nightmares. From the major financial institutions in New York, London, and Paris, and Hong Kong. The reason, the Falkland crisis. It reminds us of the Iran crisis. And it goes into the fact that the powerful bankers threw money into Argentina. And the money went down to Buenos Aires, and banks from the Western Europe, United States, and Asia are left holding these debts. Argentina's total foreign debt is estimated at $32 billion. Well, there's $55 or $45 billion from Poland and another $23 billion from Romania and $32 billion from Argentina. Did all of these countries get that money and they can't pay it back? So they say, well, sorry. And the American taxpayer either has to come up with it or those banks go bankrupt. It says Argentina's total foreign debt is $32 billion. $21 billion is owed to banks in Britain and in nine other nations, $9 billion to banks in the United States, $2 billion to creditors in Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore, Bahamas, Panama, and so forth. The American banks holding most of the Argentine credits are manufacturers, Hanover, $1.1 billion, the Morgan Guarantee Trust, the Bankers Trust, the Chemical Bank, and the Citibank and Chase Manhattan. Well, why would Great Britain loan out $21 billion to Argentina if they are having a trouble matter with the Falklands all along, whether it's going to be the Malvinas or the Falklands? If they don't resolve these things, I really can't figure out how these international bankers loan these huge amounts of billions of dollars and get nothing returned for it, no collateral, nothing, And these particular countries are bankrupting the international bankers, per se, which is something that Hitler liked to do. He attacked Wall Street or could attack certain bankers, meanwhile holding his banks intact, and then getting his money out of Germany and putting it wherever he wants it to be for when the war is over, emptying it out. Now, these banks must be really stupid and foolish to lend out this kind of money, and all of a sudden they're left with a crisis, according to this particular article, Washington Bureau, the San Jose Mercury. They're left with a terrible situation that could cause panic, disarray, and cause many banks to close because of a foreign debt of $32 billion and $21 billion to Great Britain alone. I mentioned last week the Political Handbook of the World of 1975, and I just wanted to give you the reference. That was McGraw-Hill, published January the 1st, 1975, for political research done from the State University of New York at Binghamton for the Council of Foreign Relations. This is a large 700-page book. And when the book just starts out with Antarctica, first country, and then Argentina. And Argentina, it says, second in size among the countries of South America, the Argentine Republic includes the national territory of Tierra del Fuego, and also including the Falklands as well as portions of Antarctica. So that the Argentine government has portions of Antarctica and they controlled the Falklands, according to the Council of Foreign Relations in 1957. It didn't say that Falklands belongs to Great Britain. That was published a long time ago, and also part of Antarctica belongs to Argentina, and it'd be interesting to see which part. Now, the Los Angeles Times this week had an article, an update on the subject that I've brought up before, not far removed from that area of Argentina and down there, the appointment by Ronald Reagan of J. Peter Grace to what he has a new committee, what he describes as cutting down expenses of government to root out inefficiency and waste. And he appointed J. Peter Grace to be on this private sector survey on cost control. And there's been a controversy that has been firing up in some newspapers now. It was very quiet for a while. The associate of Mr. Grace is Dr. Otto Ambrose, convicted war criminal, Nazi war criminal. And the article, the Los Angeles Times, says that they don't feel that there's anything wrong in employing Mr. Grace as a partner of Otto Ambrose. They've been partners for years because they said this is a technical position. And besides that, Mr. Otto Ambrose has served his own time, that he has paid his dues to society. This is that they said that Grace's associate paid his debt to society. They don't say how he paid it. They're both multimillionaires working for IG Farben, and it was Otto Ambrose who designed the gas for the concentration camps and also the slave labor. And Ambrose is described as a brilliant scientist who worked for the United States Department of Energy. Now, I knew that the Department of Energy was a dangerous place, and this Ambrose was supposed to die after the trials at Nuremberg. He survived. And last week I referred to an article I did in the Berkeley Barb in 1974, but I didn't mention to you that on page 2 of that article, when I was saying terror is official 8 years ago, I said that the genocide and the reduction of jobs and the closing in on minorities in this country would come from, in quotes, the energy crisis, that they would use the energy department. At that time, it seemed that this was going to be the cover for rounding up and controlling not only the wages, but turning people actually into slave labor. And the insult of appointing Mr. Grace to this cabinet position has not been solved yet. There's a letter-writing campaign to Ronald Reagan, if you feel like writing letters. His staff so far says that they don't see anything wrong with it at all, and that the two partners from IG Farben, who worked close for 30 years, make a fine team, and that really what Ronald Reagan's secretary, whoever answered the request so far on this matter or the letters objecting to it, they said that they didn't see any problem at all that Mr. Otto Ambrose has paid his debt to society, and that Mr. Grace and he can, I suppose, have a cabinet position for Ronald Reagan to decide how to cut money from our budget. And believe me, they'll know how to cut it. Now, as soon as J. Peter Grace was appointed to this position by Ronald Reagan, he got a special bonus from the Grace Company. That's, I guess, because he was finally recognized by the White House and put on a position of deciding, you know, how to cut the federal budget to the bone while keeping the Defense Department and the chemical contracts sky high. He got a $1 million bonus. The Wall Street Journal had an article April 19th that said J. Peter Grace, 68-year-old chairman, chief executive of W.R. Grace & Company, was paid an extra $1 million bonus, even though his salary ranges between $486,000 in 1981 and a little bit more with bonuses and fees of $62,000. He makes around $600,000 a year, but that wasn't enough for him. So in recognition for his accomplishments during his 36 years with Grace & Company as a business partner with Otto Ambrose, the man who designed the slave labor and the chemicals for extermination, as a bonus, they voted that he should have a $1 million present. So he's just been given this a $1 million present, even though this fellow has a reputation with the Nazis from World War II right up to the present time. As now that Ronald Reagan's in office, he's valuable to the Grace Company more than ever. They said $486,000 a year is his salary, $62,000 in benefits, bonus, and $261,000 in benefits. So he had a salary of $809,000 and a $1 million bonus, and he's going to cut the poor in this country right down to the bone. They really know how to put it on, I'll tell you. You've got to give these people credit for nerve. With that kind of salary, it seems that Ronald Reagan didn't appoint the right person to decide where to cut the budget. He should have taken somebody maybe who has $5,000 or $6,000 a year and see how they live. But that's not their style. And if they can get away with it, and they seem to get away with it, that's good. And more power to them. I guess you've got to really respect these people. They're so brazen in the way they go about things. Well, I was down in L.A. this week, and I picked up two good books, wonderful books, a rare picture of my personal project right now, and that project is Fritz Kramer. And I want you people who listen to the program, World Watchers, to collect books on World War II, particularly the Battle of Malmedy, where the Americans, about 10,000, were massacred. And I'm following the career of four Kramers, and I'm going to detail them more maybe in the next week or two. I've done several broadcasts on them. But one Fritz Kramer worked for Adolf Hitler. He worked for Heinrich Himmler in the SS. He worked with Otto Skorzeny at that treacherous battle at Malmedy where over 10,000 Americans were killed. And he was the genius behind that operation and Hitler's top spy. And I got a picture, a pictorial history of the SS written by Andrew Mollo. The date was 1923 to 1945, the history of the OS of the SS, Hitler's SS. And in this book, there's a picture numbered 348, and it has three men at a trial in Germany. One is Sepp Dietrich, commander of the 6th Panzer Division. A standing trial with 73 people, including the chief of the staff of this particular army group that killed so many Americans, Chief of Staff Fritz Kramer, the commander of this operation. On July 16, 1943, the war was over in May of 43. The war was over in 45. On 16th of July, 43 people, not 1943, 43 prisoners were accused and sentenced to death for their role of murdering American soldiers at Malmedy, 43 of them. And Mr. Sepp Dietrich and Mr. Priest and Mr. Kramer are seen here in this book that I got. And Kramer doesn't have his number on. He's prisoner 33 at this trial, but he's just holding his nose in this particular picture. Then the book has an item under the picture, and it says this. thanks to the energetic effort of American Prosecution Counsel Major Everett, none of the controversial sentences were carried out. They were supposed to get 25, 18, and 10 years sentence for the murder of over 10,000 Americans in one little geographic area. 25, 18, and 10 years for the murder of the Americans. Thanks to the energetic effort of American Prosecution Counsel Major Everett, none of the people, there were 43 of them, none of the controversial sentences was ever carried out. And by 1956, the last of the group from the Malmedy group has been released from prison. They were in prison May 16th, 1946. That was a year after the war was over. Now, the reason I'm pursuing this is that I want to know if that Fritz Kramer again, the one in the docket with Mr. Siep Dietrich, and in this picture, another Mr. Press, P-R-I-E-S-S, are those people the same that worked with the CIA when the World War II was over? See, Dietrich worked with Senator Joe McCarthy and Mr. Piper, who was also a German official, high-ranking German official. They were released from prison on the help of Senator Joe McCarthy, who in 1946 became a senator. His money was put up for the campaign by German Nazis in Wisconsin. Then he saw that these fellows were released from prison, and they were out right after their trial. Many were released immediately. But Mr. Fritz Kramer, whose picture, that rare picture of him, he's not in many history books, was released from prison. And a Fritz Kramer goes on to Washington to become that iron mentor that I've talked about behind Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger and Mr. Sonnenfeld and all the chief of staffs that are running this thing down in Argentina now, that we're also running the Vietnam War and Laos and Cambodia and arming Skorzeny's troops, sending 30 or 40 of them over to Egypt with the assistance of Skorzeny, who was at the battle down there at the Bulge along with them and with Himmler and Hitler. Skorzeny gets out, leaves prison, and he's arming Gaddafi and Nasser and Arafat and Sadat in the Middle East and turning them all into Nazi strongholds. And then they have go from Madrid down to South America to Argentina, and they all have a continuous process of interrelationships with each other and with members of the United States Congress. Now, I believe as I pursue this Fritz Kramer story with you, and I'll do it almost every week, a little piece of the puzzle, I believe that it's the biggest spy story in the United States. We hear about Kim Philby. He was the notorious head of British intelligence who then defected to the Soviet Union. But the counterpart were the Nazis that took over our Defense Department, the OSS when it became the CIA, the Pentagon, the Navy intelligence, who really took over the United States government instead of the communists taking it over. The Nazis took it over lock, stock, and barrel. And this Fritz Kramer, who's photographed in this particular book, is mentioned as having been released because the Americans dropped all sentences and let him out. And we don't know where he went after he left the docket of this particular trial at Dachau of May 46. I'm collecting as many books on the subject as I can afford to buy, and the others I'm photocopying from the library, the indexes, and I want to locate that Mr. Kramer. And in connection with the Fritz Kramer, for Hitler's Kramer and then the Kramer that works with Kissinger and Haig, the one that worked with Hitler and also the one that worked with Haig and Kissinger, I believe is the same man whose brother was in London as a Nazi war criminal at the end of the war. There was a criminal in London who was kept with Walter Dornberger and the other top Nazis as soon as the war was over. And I'm trying to study many of the history books to get the links of these particular people to a Nazi base in Malmo, Sweden, that was directly connected to Himmler and to the OSS and Alan Dulles and London intelligence. What I believe is that we have four Kramers, and two of them One worked for Germany and United States Army at the same time. The other worked in England and in Sweden at the same time, and they were brothers. So that instead of four different Kramers, we have two, and they were brothers, and they were serving the same master. Now, that's a kind of hard one to put together, but when I set my mind to find something, I'll stay with it for years if I have to, because I believe it is the answer to what is going to go on in the control of these oceans. You get these articles in the newspaper about the control of the Indian Ocean, the Pacific, the Atlantic, the development down on that area at the South Pole, where we were led to believe, if we wanted to, and didn't want to look any further, about it being a base of freezing area that no one could get through, and there's just a lot of penguins and sheep. This is a vital military area with huge land masses, places for flying in large amount of people, for genocide, for murder, for this experimentation, for atomic research, for secret weapon bases. The intent was there to begin World War III. There was a program last week on television where the Argentines referred to their area as the Fatherland. Maybe you heard it. This goes on all the time. There seems to be unlimited money. If I were had the time to spend 2 weeks to add up the missing millions of articles that I've just collected and talked about on the air, where are they gone? Most of them are down in the area of South America. So if the money is there and the intent is there and the organization and the technology is there, how long will it be before various countries take sides and line up against the United States? It's been my premise that we've been a captive nation for a long, long time. And now I'll have a chance to prove it or disprove it as the weeks go on in the next weeks or months, because the behavior of Alexander Haig to the Argentinians, the major Pentagon people playing it as if we're going to favor Great Britain when we gave them the encouragement to take the steps that they're doing, is obvious to me that there's so much double dealing. This morning on ABC News, there was a broadcast pro-Argentine or pro-British, which stand you take, and the American newscasters down there were very much Argentine, that we shouldn't interfere, that we should have it the Malvinas, we should hand them the islands. And they didn't explain the oceans and the power that goes with giving it to Argentina and the lack of responsibility of Argentina showing that they can govern their own people without a total fascism. And we favored them if they were, in quotes, anti-communist, that was good enough. But we can't explain their alliance with many countries. As a matter of fact, the State Department this week said that we would cut off weapons to Argentina, and they remarked on ABC this morning that we don't send them weapons. Israel sends them. France and Israel has armed Argentina. With 30,000 or 40,000 people missing, and most of them labor people or Jews down there, Israel has been arming them. And that, again, brings up that awful area that I mistrust the Israeli government down to its rock bottom, and they are the ones that have supplied them with these weapons. So there's a intricate web of double dealing that's going on for a long time. This thing isn't going to be settled in any number of weeks at all, but a lot more things are going to surface that will recall your memory that I've talked about in the past years, and I'll call attention to them, because you'll begin to see as these power brokers shift how much power there is down there, and let's see how much weight they throw in getting Great Britain out of the way so they have control of Antarctica and of the waterways. Well, we'll go back into that next week. It'll be an ongoing project for weeks to come, but it's interesting, if not scary, to watch it unfold. Scary, I should say. It really is. But we'll watch it next week, and we'll continue with some more of that, I'm sure, next week, and other things, too. Meanwhile, this is Mae Bressel. You take care of yourselves, and I'll be back with you and Carmel next week, okay?
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Bressel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
KLRD. Carmel by the Sea.